This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Comes to Burakovsky, now to Montour, left circle down low, set in front, they score, Matty Beniers. Canucks lead the Kraken 3-2, 6-on-5 for Seattle. Burakovsky right point, left side long shot, they score! It's Vince Dunn for the line with a seeing eye wrister that beats Kevin Lankinen. And the Kraken have done it again. They tie it at 3 in the final minute of the third.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Now Matty Beniers needs to score for Seattle. His 8th career shootout attempt, he's 1-for-7, and he'll go slowly wide onto the left wing. Beniers in on Lankinen, is stopped by the Vancouver goaltender, and the Canucks win. It wasn't easy. At times it wasn't pretty, but they start 2025 with 2 points on the road. They edge the Kraken 4-3 tonight in the shootout.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks crack but don't break in Seattle. Come away with a shootout victory 4-3 over the Seattle Kraken. It is Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar. And as always, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. A 4-3 Canucks shootout win over the Kraken. We are going to bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in a moment. And as always, the postgame show is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Look, Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. And the Canucks coughed up another lead in the third period. They were up 3-1 against Seattle, but this time held their composure, got to the shootout, got through overtime, and were able to win this one. JT Miller scoring the lone goal that was scored in the shootout to give the Canucks the victory. And we talked about this before the game. The results matter, whether it's process or whatever. You need to get points. And 1 point was kind of the bare minimum. They get the 2. It wasn't pretty all the way through, but you know, I saw somebody text in and say the Canucks didn't deserve to win this game. I'm not sure Seattle deserved to win the game. Mm-hmm. It was back and forth, pretty even overall. So I'm not sure you can point to this one and say the Canucks did not deserve to win it. The process up and down, but they had some strong moments in this game considering how undermanned they are on the blue line. So you'll take the 2 points and get home here.
Yeah, it started very slow. And
the first 10 minutes were tough, yeah.
And they grew into that period. It got better. I feel like the rest of the game, though, like went to a low event style the rest of the way. Like, I don't have a lot of Kraken chances here written up from the final 40 minutes. So, again, if they're trying to play low event hockey right now and dictate the tempo that way, they kind of accomplished that there in the final 40 minutes. There was a couple of chances, yeah, and obviously the goal late. That's not really a high danger, but as far as like what they could, at 5-on-5, keep in check, I thought they did a pretty good job of it, getting this result and securing 2 points.
I lied. It's no Randeep Janda joining us. It's Brendan Batchelor joining us.
And Batchelor, I got that memo.
We both got the memo. You know what I did?
I read the memo.
I did not read the memo. When you don't read memos, you get in trouble, and that's what I just did. But Batch, thanks for giving us some time here on the postgame show. And, you know, we talked about this before the game. Process, result, was a process good enough for the victory here tonight?
Yeah, I think so. I think over the balance of the game, you could say that they were probably the better team, although there were some moments that weren't great, as you guys were alluding to. I didn't think they were very good off the start. Obviously, the Stevenson goal kind of took the wind out of their sails early, and it took them a little bit of time to find their legs after that. But then, you know, I thought in the second period they were pretty good. They had the lead. They built on it early in the third. And once again, it's the Seattle team that finds a way to claw back late and get a goal. That's now 3 6-on-5 goals for the Kraken in the last two games here against the Canucks. But credit them. They bent but didn't break. They had chances to win it in overtime. They could have lost it in overtime as well. And they go to the shootout and get the win and can come home with 2 points. So, you know what? I'm going to admit I was wrong when we talked about this on the pregame show, because at the end of the night, it wasn't an oil painting. But the thing that matters for this group is they get 2 points. They start the calendar year off well. And now they got to hurry home and face the Predators tomorrow at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, if you're just mapping this out, too, of who kind of drove the opportunities here, you know, there was that prolonged shift in the second period. Connor Garland kind of started it all, but he also gets the goal here. And if you're looking at, you know, valuable members of who contributed to getting 2 points tonight, he probably leads the way.
Yeah, we gave Kevin Lankinen and our player of the game tonight for coming in relief, but Garland was a close second. I thought this was one of his better games in recent weeks. He scores the goal with a nice move on the breakaway, had other chances as well. And, you know, I think that's where the Canucks really tilted this game in their favor, were those sustained shifts in the second period where, you know, I think it was Jamie Oleksiak was out for more than 4 minutes on one of them or something crazy like that. Like, you don't see that very often. And for this team to dominate play that way with the guys that they are missing from their lineup right now and build momentum from shift to shift by hemming the Kraken in was impressive. And it was a big part of the reason that they won this game tonight. And Garland was a big part of the reason that they were able to drive play so successfully at that point in the game.
Yeah. And I thought Garland was really the driver here tonight for the Canucks. And I know a lot's been made about JT Miller. He ends up getting an assist on the night, scores a shootout winner as well. So he technically gets a game winning goal for tonight's game as well. And the shootout winner, even though they don't get a goal, they still get the game-winning goal designation. Mm-hmm. So that's a good one for JT. He's taking a lot of criticism, though, and you look at his minutes tonight, he played just over 15 minutes. However, and I think this is a point that is not being made with his minutes being kind of thrown out there, he had 28 shifts, which was the most shifts out of any forward on the Canucks tonight. And also, he had the shortest average length of shifts of any Canuck tonight, 33 seconds per shift. So I see the numbers. They're under 16 minutes, played 15:41. Garland played 20:35. But it essentially comes down to him keeping his shifts short. And I wonder if he was playing through something causing him to keep it a little bit tighter than usual. Because it's not like the coach didn't go to him. He just kept his shifts significantly shorter than his other teammates.
Yeah, and, you know, we don't know anything. I'm just going to speculate here. Based on the way that Miller looks out there, he doesn't look 100% right now. Now, you know, could he be 100% and just be fighting it right now? I'm sure that's a possibility. But when you see that the shifts were really short throughout, you know, that to me speaks to a guy that's battling a little bit one way or another, whether it's just with his form and how he's feeling about playing or whether he's dealing with some sort of nagging issue at the moment. But, you know, the thing about JT Miller, in spite of how good he looks or doesn't look, he finds a way to contribute. He's now got 6 assists on a 5-game point streak for this team, producing at a time where they need some of their top guys to produce. And, you know, he's been consistent in that regard, hitting the score sheet, even if some of the other parts of his game haven't been as effective. But at the same time, I agree with you. I think Garland really drove play, and that line as well with DiGiuseppe on it. I think that those two guys complemented each other pretty well and had a good night. So I'd be surprised if Rick Tocchet goes away from that combination tomorrow against the Predators, because they seem to do pretty well. And you know, Garland seemed to be all over the ice tonight. I also thought Nils Höglander had a pretty good night, had a couple of good chances to break his goal scoring drought. Unfortunately, he couldn't do it. So now he's up to 30 games without a goal, but he was around the puck. He was dogged on the forecheck at times, and that's what you want to see from a guy that is clearly fighting confidence right now with the lack of production that we've seen from him recently.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about Höglander, because there was a lot of comments about him coming into the inbox, and he saw that little dangle around Vince Dunn, and he crests that 12-minute mark, which, you know, I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but that feels like an important number for him to top, because he's basically only done it once going back to November. So an important number to get to, and again, as you mentioned, just like looked active and willing to participate, especially with the goal scoring opportunities, ends up directing 5 shots tonight. Obviously gets the one that helps out for the Sasson goal, but just in general, like, yeah, looked a threat to create a goal.
Yeah, and, you know, the minutes haven't really been there for Höglander. It's the last 28 games in a row now that he's played under 14 minutes. So, you know, not getting the same opportunities that he did up the lineup last year. And at times, those minutes have been really low in the single digits in terms of minutes. But when you're in that spot, when you're fighting it, when you don't have the trust of the coach necessarily to play more than that, you've got to find a way to impact the game in any way that you can. And I thought Höglander did impact the game tonight, and very well could have scored a goal or two with some of the chances he created. And it kind of feels like that's been happening more for him lately, where we've been saying, what does this guy have to do to buy a goal? So from a Canuck perspective, you would hope that one bounces in off him one of these days, and that gives him a bit of confidence, and he can go on and start scoring a little bit and find some more consistency to his game. But, you know, Rick Tocchet has talked about this a lot, that when Hoglander simplifies his game, regardless of whether he's up or down the lineup, when he gets in on the forecheck, when he gets under the skin of opponents, when he creates chances by forcing turnovers, that's the Nils Hoglander that can have success. And I thought we saw that version of Nils Hoglander in this game tonight. The challenge, as always, for him is going to be, can he do it consistently?
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the thing. Get a goal, and can you get it going here consistently for the team? They need the scoring throughout their lineup. And, you know, there are a lot of positives, too, to talk about as far as individual players. We'll get to the goaltending in a moment here. But Max Sasson gets another goal tonight. He now has, 6 points in 14 games. There was a bottom line, his second goal. And he just finds a way to get in front of the net. He's done some good job defensively as well. And he's really making his case to stay here with the big club the rest of the season.
Yeah, Rick Tocchet always raves about the speed that he brings down the lineup. And, you know, I thought that line had some really good moments tonight as well. Obviously, the goal. But, you know, they were out there at times when the Canucks were controlling play as well through some of those key stretches in the middle of the game. So full credit to him. He's not a guy that I think any of us would have had on our radar coming into the year as someone that would play, you know, a meaningful extended stretch in the National Hockey League, but he's kind of knocked the door down. And, you know, this started from preseason where I think they played him 6 straight games in like 7 or 8 nights or something crazy like that. And he just kept playing and kept performing and kept doing what he does. And it's nice to see him not just getting rewarded with minutes at the NHL level, but being rewarded by putting the puck in the back of the net as well. And he's now up to 6 points in 15 games, 2 goals, 4 assists. So for a fourth line guy in his first ever experience with NHL hockey, that's pretty decent output. So you like what you're seeing from Max Sasson. And if this forward group can ever get completely healthy, it'll be interesting to see what sort of decisions that they have to make down the lineup in terms of who stays up and who stays in the lineup. But with every passing game, as Sasson continues to perform pretty well, he makes a better case to stick around longer and longer.
He winds up getting 11:36 as well as far as ice time. Obviously, a lot of focus on the defense as well. And it did feel like there was kind of moments for Tyler Myers, but you kind of got the full experience. He ends up taking 11 shot attempts, scores the goal, obviously, but very active in the offensive zone. What'd you make of his game?
Yeah, you know, you need someone to be more of an offensive creator when Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup. And Rick Tocchet's right when he says you're never going to replace Quinn Hughes, but he talked about that 5 or 10% more from the guys that are in the lineup. And for Myers, I think the form that 5 or 10% takes is by being more proactive and trying to help create and jumping up into the play. And when he does that, it's quite often an adventure. And some nights it's going to go your way, and other nights it's not. And I think, you know, the last game against Seattle, we saw a sequence where it didn't, where he jumps up in overtime and turns the puck over, and Vince Dunn goes back the other way and scores on the breakaway. Tonight he's in the right spot to get the pass for Miller to score what turned out to be a crucial goal to extend the Canucks' lead. Without that goal, the Kraken comeback might have meant that there never was overtime. So, you like to see Myers being more proactive, getting involved in the offense more. And, you know, depending on how long Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup, he's the best candidate to continue doing that, for my money, when you look at the group of 6 defensemen who were in the lineup tonight with Erik Brännström coming out.
Yeah, and I got to say, I know guys like Vinny Desharnais have taken a lot of flack. I thought him and Forbert had a pretty solid night overall, and I know people wonder why Desharnais was out there in overtime. It's like, well, you got all these guys out. Who are you going to go with? And Forbert and Desharnais were probably their 2 most steady defensemen. Myers got the goal and had some moments, and it was like a traditional Myers game, right? I guess he wasn't on the ice for a goal against 5-on-5, which is very solid. Scored the goal as well, but we saw some of the ups and downs in his game overall. But, you know, before we let you go, Batch, the big story, of course, is the goaltending situation. Yet again, a storyline here in Vancouver, and Thatcher Demko had to leave the game about 7 minutes into the second period, and it looked like, and we don't have confirmation on this, but that he got at least somewhat banged up on a play later in the first period when Noah Juulsen knocked into him and he fell over and looked like he was favoring his lower body getting up, and he was slow to get off the ice at the end of the first period, and then of course leaves the game in the second. Kevin Lankinen comes in and he's sublime, right? Helps the team win. But yet again, we're sitting here wondering about Thatcher Demko's status, and I think we're all in agreement. We're all hoping it's not the same injury he's been dealing with.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, you'd feel so bad for Demko if this is another extended absence. And again, we don't know anything, so we don't want to speculate or assume. But with the injury issues he's faced, you just hope that this is a minor tweak or something unrelated, that he only has to miss a little bit of time, if any, really, going forward. And, you know, I guess we'll find out. Rick Tocchet, I believe, is meeting with the media right now as we speak. So we'll get that audio turned around as fast as we can and find out exactly what the status of Demko is or what the update is from the head coach. But this creates an interesting situation in the short term as well, because the Canucks have to come home and play Nashville tonight. The Abbotsford Canucks are currently in Laval getting set to play back-to-back games against the Rocket tomorrow night and on Saturday. So if they need to recall Artur Shelovs, for example, they've got to get him on a plane first thing in the morning back from Montreal to potentially back up or even start tomorrow, depending on how you feel about going back to Lankinen under 24 hours after he had to come in and play more than half of this game. And then if that happens with Shelovs, guess what? The Canucks are getting back on a plane and going right back to Montreal on Saturday. So he's bouncing back and forth across the country. But I guess we'll wait and hear the exact update on Thatcher Demko before we get into any of these sort of speculations and situations. But you know, I think that's probably the biggest fear for many Canuck fans with Demko coming back was something like this happening. And this is only his seventh game of the year, and it's really disappointing and would be really disappointing for him, I'm sure, if he has to miss any sort of time after all the hard work. And that's the one thing we heard, and Rick Tocchet talked about this, is Demko was in early in the morning working with the trainers, working with the medical staff, doing everything he could to get back into the lineup as soon as possible. And it would be really heartbreaking for him if this is another setback that forces him to miss any significant amount of time.
Yeah, and it's going to be really fascinating to watch, and hopefully it's nothing long-term and nothing serious for Thatcher Demko. But Batch, great stuff as always, and thanks for stepping in for Randeep. I know he likes slacking off, so we'll chat with you guys again coming up tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
Just kidding about Randeep. Always a pleasure chatting with both these gentlemen. And the great call from Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda tonight. A 4-3 Canucks shootout win over the Kraken in Seattle. And that was your game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. We'll get to more of your phone calls on the other side. 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. But before we hit the break, Bick, what's happening on the text inbox 650-650?
A lot happening in the inbox. This one, Shelby in Victoria. Langan and I both did the same little dancey dance to celebrate that win at the end. I just had to get in dancey dance.
Yeah,
that
like
was
that,
awesome.
Yeah.
Unsigned, Kevin always saving our bacon in. All that right. One coming in. That's
bad.
Pretty strong.
I see you working.
Alex from Mission, I thought they played pretty good, just turtled in the last 10 minutes like they did in the last few games. And then this one from Ross. Fans need to hear the real important stuff. Currently on a 100% point percentage in 2025, cup or bust.
Hashtag facts only. They are undefeated.
Yeah, facts only.
In 2025. Hopefully to keep that going for as long as possible. Jeffro says, just so lame when it comes to the whole Demko stuff. We all know it. It sucks. I get it. And we'll hope to see that. We hope to hear something too bad. Rick Tocchet is meeting with the media right now. We'll get his thoughts on the other side immediately to find out the latest on Thatcher Demko's situation here. Hopefully nothing too bad. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line as well, 604-280-0650. 0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. The head coach and your thoughts next on the Canuck Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canuck Central postgame show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now Matty Beniers needs to score for Seattle. His eighth career shootout attempt, he's 1-for-7, and he'll go slowly wide onto the left wing. Beniers in on Lincoln and is stopped by the Vancouver goaltender, and the Canucks win. It wasn't easy. At times it wasn't pretty. But they start 2025 with 2 points on the road. They edge the Kraken 4-3 tonight in the shootout.
And that's a character win from the Vancouver Canucks. didn't have an ideal first period. They came back strong in the second, continued in the third. Seattle fought back. But in the end, win this in a shootout, and you have to tip the cap to Kevin Lankinen, and came into this game cold, ends up making some big saves in the second period and in the third period, and his money on Matty Beniers as he closes out this game in the shootout. And he's an excited goaltender as well, as his teammates jump onto the ice, and they're giving him a fist bump and a big hug.
Kevin Lankinen comes in for relief of Thatcher Demko and stands tall, helping the Canucks win 4-3 in a shootout over the Kraken in Seattle. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to get to your thoughts on the text inbox and the phone boards coming up in a few moments. But the big story being Thatcher Demko and his status. Had to leave the game in the second period due to what looked like to be an injury. So we have the thoughts of the Canucks head coach coming up in a moment. And as soon as we do, we'll go to it. But before we do that, what's coming in on the text inbox? 650-650.
Nonstop in the inbox right now. 650-650. Randy in Vancouver. One in a row. Let's go. It's a mini streak here. Pierre from Courtney saying we officially have a rivalry battle of the Pacific Northwest. You heard it here first from Pierre. There's a back-to-back home ice victories, or I guess on the road victories for these two teams here, making it a bit exciting. This one, Ben the Chip Guy. Some bigger stories tonight, but Tyler Myers was a stud out there. One of the best games we've seen from him in a long time. Stepped up, took leadership out there. Got to give the Chaos Giraffe his flowers. Also encouraging game for Hoglander. If that effort stays, he will be scoring shortly. And yeah, there's a mixture of Hoglander positive text coming in here. 650, 650 for a lot of people.
And I actually thought the blue line with you know how many guys they had out of the lineup and who had to play tonight. I thought they all had a very solid game. And, you know, we'll get to Vinny Desharnais and Derek Forbert coming up in a little bit. But I thought Desharnais had a very strong game. And even Guillaume Brisebois ended up cresting 15 minutes tonight. So how much ice time did he have exactly?
Guillaume Brisebois was 15:31.
15:31, right? So,
with a plus one because he was out there for the Myers goal.
Yeah, so I thought overall he was pretty steady and a steady night for the most part from the Canucks blue line, and they find a way to get the 4-3 win. All right, let's get a status update on Thatcher Demko and the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. And here he is at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town.
Ready to talk about the team effort in this one and the relief to grab the win tonight.
Yeah, it was gutsy effort. You know, obviously disappointed they tied up, but the guys didn't, you know, the guys stuck together. And we got the 2 points. I thought that V really was scrappy tonight. Thought Hoglander played well for us, the Sasson line. Obviously Gars with a big goal. I mean, there's a lot of good efforts from a lot of guys.
Got to ask, obviously seeing Demko down the tunnel, any updates on him?
He had some back spasms, so I don't think it's serious, but, you know the way back spasms are. You know, it could be a day or two. I'm not sure.
What do you hope the team carries over from this game into tomorrow, seeing as it's a back-to-back?
Just confidence. I mean, like I said, we've been in a lot of one-goal games. It's nice to be on the other side of it. I think gives some guys some confidence. And, there's pressure situations out there and just hold the fort.
What can you say about Lankinen? Tough spot to be in.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like that all year. It's a tough spot, not warmed up. Comes in, had to make two or three big saves. I mean, gotta love the kid.
You have to be disappointed when they score that goal, considering what happened last Saturday. But you think the team has a little scar tissue and was able to respond a little bit better?
Yeah, I mean, obviously disappointed. It was, you wish a couple things happened, but, you take the win. Thought it was hard, hard effort. I think we deserved it. I thought, for the most part, played a good game. Obviously, we got to clean some stuff up. But we got some good efforts from some guys.
You mentioned Hoagland, do you think? He's starting to put his game back together?
No, we had to get me in a talky talk today, and I put him out in overtime. I just thought he deserved to, he just told me he's got to get back to his identity, and, that line was good for us. I thought the Sass was good. I mean, especially early. We weren't ready. We had a couple of bad shifts, and they went out there. They had two big shifts for us, and they get the goal for us. I got to credit them for the win tonight. That was a big goal for us.
Brisebois in the lineup tonight. Yeah. What did you see from him?
I thought for a guy that's been out for a long time, he's battled back. I'm proud of him. I thought he did a great job. I think he defended well. It's tough. You throw a guy in there, hasn't played a game in, I don't know, is it a year now?
Two years.
I mean, you know, coming off what he's come off, it's a big step for him. I'm proud of him.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. And from vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And Rick Tocchet, the biggest news on Thatcher Demko, says it is back spasms. And I've already seen some people on social media mention, well, I don't believe that because their record with injuries and their updates haven't always been 100%. But he says back spasms, doesn't think it's going to be serious. Might take a day or two, but we'll see obviously where that's going to be at tomorrow and the day after. It's still good news to hear it's that and not the knee. Now, I don't know they'd be lying like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think if that wasn't the case...
When it comes to player health, I know there's skepticism, of course, of like, lower body, that feels like it's...
Yeah, I mean, I think usually they wouldn't do that in that way, right? So we'll see.
That you certainly hope that is just forthright right there.
Yeah.
Because, look... You're just creating a bigger mess.
They might be wrong. Yeah. I mean, as far as like how long it's going to be, but they usually don't lie.
Yes.
About what it is. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it could be wrong on the assessments, and obviously we always have to take everything with a grain of salt. But he said back spasms. They're usually pretty clear with. They were clear at least with what that was. So we'll see ultimately where that is. And this one says, Doc Tocchet didn't seem convincing with a Demko back spasm comment. I pray he is telling the truth. Maniac text.
I would actually argue that he sounded very confident about it, putting a timeline on it.
Just saying.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So we'll see where it's at. All right. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more as the show goes on here. A couple other things that he kind of mentioned here was that Sasson line and Hoglander, how especially early on, they did a really good job of creating some chances and creating a bit of energy. The Canucks, the first 10 minutes of this game, were really behind the pace, and Seattle was full credit for taking the 1-0 lead, and you kind of worried where the night was going to go for Vancouver, but that line, and obviously Sasson ends up getting the game-tying goal, Hoglander gets an assist on it as well, they were probably the Canucks' most active line in that first, and a big reason why they came away with it 1-1 in the first.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, the play there where they end up getting the goal too, like just being active, and you know it's coming off the faceoff, and Nils Hoglander, you know, draws Vince Dunn up the wall, and so you think, hey, D-man's taken carrying with me, there's only one down low, let's just send the puck in the middle and get it to a dangerous area, and it bounces off Heinen and goes there for Sasson in that spot. So again, good recognition, and you know, as we mentioned, it was a better game from Nils Hoglander, gets the attaboy from the coach, and the recognition that whole line had success. And like, this is the thing that Nils Hoglander did well last season. Like, he was able to drive depth lines and have his success that way. And also nice just hear that, you know, Nils Hoglander took some ownership of it in his meeting with Rick Tocchet there, and Tocchet detailing that he wants to get back to his identity. And this felt far more similar to what we saw last year from Nils Hoglander.
Yeah, and that's what he has to get back to, right? He has to be able to forecheck the way he has, create scoring chances for the team. If you don't finish, but at least get the chances. The last few games, he has been getting chances, and hopefully that leads to a turnaround for number 21 of the Vancouver Canucks. But did pick up an assist, obviously, on that goal from Max Sasson. And what a run Max Sasson has been on for the Canucks, too, since being recalled from Abbotsford. All right, before we get to more of your text messages, let's take a couple phone calls here as well after a 4-3 Canucks shootout win, and we'll start things off in Langley where we have John on the line. John, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight,
guys?
What's going on?
Hey man, just wanted to call in and give a shout out to Kevin Langadin. I mean, the guy stepped in after Demko went down, and he's been looking solid, eh?
Yeah, he's been terrific.
Yeah, definitely not easy to jump into that kind of pressure, but he's been holding it down, and I really hope Demko's all right. I know he said it's just back spasms, so let's hope it doesn't keep him out too long. But he looked great tonight, man. Langdon has got the job done so far, but Demko's the guy we need long-term. And I hope he's back soon.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Thanks for the phone call. That's John calling in. And, I mean, what else can you say about Kevin Langdon and how he's played? You know, he's eligible for an extension now that we're into January 1st. You mentioned that into the new year. I mean, if you want to get him signed to a number that's not onerous, you probably try to get him to sign sooner than later, but it all kind of comes down to, you know, where is Demko going to be at? You know, they say it's back spasms, and hopefully it is, right? But if that's not a long-term thing, I don't think you worry about it too much, but if it is somehow, does that put more onus on trying to get something done with Lankinen before he, you know, gets on a bigger run the rest of the season?
So, like, it makes sense. I get all the texts coming in here about, like, oh, sign Lankinen. I'm just curious, like, what's Kevin Lankinen's impetus to want to sign a deal right now? Obviously, like, the security and that level of money, it's, you know, if it's $20 million that we're talking about here. But he's got the rest of the season to put up something fantastic here. If there's a scenario where this team goes to the playoffs and he's got to be the one to do it, like, if I'm Kevin Lankinen, I'm probably waiting more time here to see if that number can get even higher. If he has playoff success, it's going to change the number a great deal.
Yeah.
Like Aiden Hill went from like barely playing or not having success to having an amazing cup run and got a nice, it was only 2 years, but still like that was just shy of $5 million. If Kevin Lankinen has a decent playoffs here, that's going to change the number. So just based on comparables, obviously the Joey DeCord number gets brought up a lot. Aiden Hill's number gets mentioned. Mackenzie Blackwood just signed a five and change deal over $26 million. So that's kind of the range you're looking at all of a sudden for Kevin Lankinen.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where it gets interesting, right? If you want to get it cheaper, like, you know, Woodley was mentioning to us, it kind of comes down to how many games he plays and what he does, right? So it's going to be really fascinating to see what they do. But obviously, if this team is going to do anything of significance, you kind of want to have Demko healthy too. And up until him getting injured, the first goal of the game happened, probably not a great goal, kind of goes through him. After that, he made a number of big saves, especially when the Canucks were trying to find their legs early on. So both goaltenders did a pretty good job overall, especially Lankinen coming in relief as well. Let's take one more phone call here, and let's go to Seattle, where we have Chris on the line, a Canuck fan in enemy territory. Chris, thanks for calling in. And what are your thoughts here tonight? Chris?
Hello?
Yeah, we got you.
No, this is Sean in New West, not Chris. This is Sean in New West in Seattle.
Oh, okay, all right.
And you know what? This is my fifth trip to Seattle, and I'm perfect 5-0. So every time the Canucks have played in Seattle, I'm a perfect 5-0. And even when they blew that 2-0 lead, I knew they weren't going to lose in the shootout or overtime because I'm there. I'm perfect 5-0. And I said on Saturday when they blew that lead at home, I told my Seattle friends and, you know, that they're down there and they're gloating about it, that they wouldn't be gloating tonight, and they did not. Because JT Miller, he showed up and he scored that shootout winning goal. So big win. They just got to keep the momentum. They got that 1-point lead now in the wild card spot. They just got to keep it going. Get 2 points against Nashville tomorrow. And you know what? You can call me Mr. Perfect. You know, the WWE former Intercontinental Champion, Mr. Perfect. That's who I am. I am Mr. Perfect when I'm in Seattle. And that's all I got to say about that.
I love it. Sean in New West calling in from Seattle, watching the Vancouver Canucks win in a shootout 4-3. Let's take one more phone call here before we hit the break. And let's continue in Seattle. Let's go to Nathan, who is in Seattle, and he's got a take as well. What do you have for us tonight, Nathan?
That's Canucks hockey, baby. Let's go, boys. You got me there?
Yeah, we got you, buddy.
Good stuff. Almost blew the game just like last time. But we are officially undefeated in 2025. Let's go, boys. I had a great time trolling tonight, fellas. I brought the McCann tarp, and I was misdirecting those Kraken fans. And they didn't see the foreshadow with that first-round draft pick, McCann, back in the olden days there. But tarp's off, baby, and it's Demko. Speaking of Demmer, sucks that we lose him because after that first soft goal, it looked like he wasn't letting in another one. But tough for Lank to step in, but I think he held the fort reasonably well. It's you know, power play goal and then a 6-on-5 goal. It happens, right? And Vince Dunn, I got to give him props. He's a really good offensive D-man. Tyler Myers, my beautiful chaos giraffe, had a monster game tonight, channeling his inner Hughes, skating the puck up ice and out of trouble. 5 shots on goal, 2 blocks, 1 goal. And my Miller, the closer, still not looking for a shot, which is rough, but he's still making plays and has that darn shootout move down pat still. Great atmosphere in the Climate Pledge Arena. Got to hand it to the Kraken fans. Mix of Canucks fans and Kraken fans in my section. Lots of friendly banter. Love to see it. And, Bick, you know what my New Year's resolution is?
What's up?
To hit the gym more. You want to join me, Bick?
There we
Woo-hoo!
Go.
Yeah, good night, boys.
That is Sean. No, sorry. That's Nathan calling in. Fired. Sean and Nathan both calling in from Seattle. Fired up. And Myers, I mean, we got a lot of texts about Myers tonight. Scored the goal too. I'd say there were more positive, chaotic moments as opposed to bad ones.
It was just the last goal, right? It's like, the last crack goal, the Vince Dunn one. Both Garland and Myers have an opportunity to block this shot. And they both cross the eye line of Lankinen, and the seeing eye shot cuts through a bunch of bodies there, and it just sneaks in. Like, that's the one. It's like, could you have gotten your body in the way? Do you just stay out of the eyesight of Kevin Lankinen and seal a guy on the backside? that was the one moment that kind of just stood out. But aside from that, like, yeah, he lugged the puck up ice. And he had one play where he maybe took a shot too early, but you could see him, that effectiveness of taking the puck out of the zone. Yeah, like, Myers was a strong player tonight.
He was. I like the way Myers played as well tonight and helped the Canucks win. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And we will also get to more of your thoughts on text inbox and also on the phone board, 604-280-0650, your toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And we'll break down the goals we saw in this game, what's next for the Vancouver Canucks, and how they can keep this going with a game coming up against the Nashville Predators tomorrow. You are listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next in the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now we got a Canucks goaltending change happening here, which is somewhat surprising and slightly concerning, as Thatcher Demko is going to leave the game and Kevin Lankinen's going to come in.
And there was a delay after that goal. Thatcher Demko skated over to the bench, went to the room or went down the tunnel, and Kevin Lankinen has got his helmet. He's skating towards the crease. Certainly a situation to watch as Kevin Lankinen is coming in cold.
Yeah, he had some back spasms, so I don't think it's serious, but you know the way back spasms are. You know, it could be a day or two. I'm not sure.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, back spasms for Thatcher Demko post-game. Hopefully a couple of days, but I know there's always some skepticism when timelines are mentioned, because it'll be short-term. The next thing you know, the player's out for a few weeks. But the good news is, not a knee problem, because we know that's been the big issue Thatcher Demko has been dealing with. Had to leave the game, did not return, but Kevin Lankinen comes in, stands tall, helps the Canucks win 4-3 in a shootout over the Seattle Kraken. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We'll get to the phone boards coming up in a second. The text inbox is jumping, Bick. So much reaction, as you would imagine, after a big Canucks victory. This one here says, from Rafe, I wasn't over the trauma of the juniors, and the Canucks didn't help much, but a W is a W, Rafe texting in, and usually wins make you feel a little bit better, at least.
Absolutely. 650-650, Rafana Maple Ridge. Without Connor Garland, probably don't win this game at all. I'll take this win and run away. Let's all just have some hope, guys. This team is missing over $20 million in players, but somehow still there in the race. That optimism not shared by everyone. Amin in Surrey, a win that feels far from a win, and as much as you're trying to find the positives, you're stretching for the ones that you have pointed out so far on the show. Honestly, it feels like this is a team that we are stuck with this year. They may go on a run, but we always have that feeling of, when will the return of the mediocre team of the year to date return? That's from Amin in Surrey.
Okay.
Who's prepared for the shoe to drop.
Okay, so people are looking at how the Canucks played the game tonight without Quinn Hughes on the back end and no Filip Hronek. They're like, this is what the Canucks are going to be all season.
I'm reading the text.
Do people read the things they send in? Like, do you think of the stuff you say sometimes, right? So you guys don't think that the Canucks are going to look better with how they're going to play and get out of their own zone with Quinn Hughes' back?
It's similar to what we discussed in the pregame show, where some people were like, I don't know about this team. Like, the guys that are out, they haven't even been playing well. And look, that's true. You know, but Pettersson can play a lot better. But like, I'll take Elias Pettersson over a lot of guys.
The Canucks,
that are
obviously,
playing,
we know, have to be a lot better. It's just they won the hockey game. They found a way to get 2 points. They blew up a 2-goal lead in the third. All stuff, of course, that you don't need to do. But they found a way to get the 2 points. You're getting guys back. You're getting Quinn Hughes back, and he's going to make a big difference. And as far as the Canucks are concerned defensively tonight, I thought their D-men did a pretty good job. Yeah, it wasn't perfect. There's some moments, obviously, they can do better. The start wasn't great tonight. But, I mean, I really don't get some of the consternation around this game in particular, considering what they were up against. It wasn't like they blew the 4-1 lead last time and then cratered after that. I mean, it was two goals that they were scored on. One was after a poor JT Miller penalty, and we'll get to breakdowns in a little bit here, but he takes a penalty 200 feet away from his own ice. They score within the dying seconds of it. And then the game-tying goal, it wasn't from a lot of sustained pressure. It was a point shot, and the screens just kind of line up, and it finds a way to get past Lankinen. It wasn't the same type of...
It's also 6-on-5.
Right, but it wasn't the same type of running around in your own end, looking like you're losing the game and all your composure like they did the other game. So it was different. And, you know, like I said last game, it was unacceptable with how they blew the 3-goal lead. I don't like you blowing a 2-goal lead, but I can understand how those goals happened a lot more differently than the other game in which they happened. And of course, you don't want to see a guy take a penalty down in the offensive zone the way JT did and could have been wearing the goat horns after this game if the Canucks did not find a way to win it, but they do come back and win in a shootout at the very least.
We had a text earlier, and I apologize if I lost your name here. But someone was asking, are we the worst team in the league with an empty net or against an empty net? Because it sure doesn't seem like we score enough. So the Canucks this year have 6 goals, 4 with the empty net. They've given up 8, though, which that mark as far as like goals for percentage is the worst in the league at 42.9%. So, yes. Your eyes are telling you the truth as far as goal differential being suboptimal in that spot. And Rick Tocchet also mentioned about being in 1-goal games.
Yeah.
Whether plus or minus one, the situations. That is now the 17th 1-goal game the Canucks have played in this season, tied for 2nd in the league. St. Louis has played 18, San Jose and Vancouver up to 17.
So
they've been in a lot of tight hockey games.
Yeah, got to find ways to win more of them than they have so far, right? We know their overtime record hasn't been fantastic, but they found a way to get that extra point here tonight.
I guess I just say of the 19, 9 of them have been losses. So it is of the 17, 9 have been losses, 8 have been wins.
So 8 and 7 essentially, 8 and 9 essentially. All right. You know, you want to get that over 500. You know, don't want to be under 500 in 1-goal games. But obviously, something that to look to improve as the season goes on here, and found a way to get this one here tonight. We'll get to more of your text messages coming up in just a moment. Let's go back to the phone board 604-280-0650, and let's start things off in New West, where we have Logan on the line. Logan, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts after a 4-3 Canucks shootout victory?
Hey guys, I just want to talk a little bit about JT Miller. I just think that, you know, all the reports coming out about him and whatever, I'm not even going to talk about that, but just like, if you're going to be, you know, he's well known as like the fiery, emotional guy. And if you're going to be like that, I just feel like you got to play a little harder. I feel like every forward on this team, except him this game, had a moment where I could go, God, they played. That was an amazing shift. They worked really hard. They forechecked, whatever. Brock Besser had that really great moment behind the boards to get the goal. I just don't know if I saw a moment like that from JT at all, and it seems Tocchet kind of agrees because his ice time was down tonight. So I was wondering what your guys' thoughts were.
Yeah, hey, thanks for the phone call, Logan. And I don't think he's wrong. JT had a mixed bag performance yet again. He looked like, I thought in overtime he was skating hard, actually, and getting off quickly. And he
well,
got
it's kind of the theme
check
of the night from JT. Again, it's true that he mentioned the minutes.
Okay, let's break the minutes then. We mentioned this earlier, too, but I think the context here does matter because you look at the minutes and he played how much?
15:41. That also includes a 1:56 in OT.
Right. However, it's about 5 minutes less than what Connor Garland had, right? But JT Miller had 2 more shifts than Connor Garland. He had 28 shifts. Yeah. Garland had 26,
He was tagged 26 times in regulation.
Right. So what I think here is a player, and you see the numbers, had the lowest average shift length out of any Canuck player tonight, 33 seconds, which is, we know the team likes to keep their shifts shorter, and most guys did keep their shifts shorter. If you look at the forwards, they were kind of in that 40-second range and just under 40 seconds or just above, and you know, not getting to that 50-second range which they want to avoid being in. But even for JT standards, very low, 33 seconds per shift. And it looked like he wasn't quite as, I want to say, is engaged the right word? Through parts of the game where just wasn't getting to his spots as well as you want him to get to, right? Wasn't maybe winning battles the same way he wanted to, but he had some good moments. He obviously got an assist.
Sets
he got
up the goal. Yep.
He had the shootout winning goal. And overtime, I thought he had a couple good shifts too. And again, got off quickly and kept it responsible. But yeah, he doesn't look like the JT we know he can be. And I think that's been the story around JT all season, right? He's given us moments, but it's always been, hey, he's been productive, but we know he can be better. At least there's a bottom line, but we know it can be better. In these past, what, five games, he has 6 points, a five-game point streak. No goals in it. We know it can be better, but there is a bottom line. So I'd say it was very much a mixed bag performance from JT, but I'm not sure I'm buying the head coach limiting his minutes based on how many shifts he got here tonight.
Yeah, it seems like a very concerted effort to keep his shift length short. Like, he's got an 11-second shift. That was on the first goal of the game. There's a 10-second shift here. 20, 16, that was part of a penalty. There's a 8-second shift at the end of the period. Like, there are some short shifts here throughout the course of the game here for JT, leading to that short number. But a lot of people have mentioned that he didn't seem too excited when the Myers goal went
yes,
in.
Yes, we'll break this down because you caught it.
Yeah, so again, a part of this play is, like, he goes heavy in on the forecheck and he gets coming together there. And the way he falls, he kind of lands on his left wrist first. And then when Meyer scores, his first reaction is to kind of shake out the left wrist and just kind of take a peek at it. So, again, just something to keep an eye on here in this in that spot.
Yeah, something to watch, but hopefully nothing too serious. But JT Miller is always a big talking point, and Logan's take on him you just heard calling in. And let's take one more phone call here before we get to some more reaction. And let's go to Summerlin, where we have Bikram on the line. Bikram, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey guys, how you doing?
We're doing great, man. How about you?
Good, good. It's good to be back on the West Coast for the holidays. So I like to watch the game at normal time, so which is good. Since the last time I've called in, a lot has happened. And based on the circumstances, do you guys think it's kind of a lost season? Or would you just, in that set retrospect, would you just wait till off season to make a significant trade? Or would you see what's out there and decide, you know what, let's just pull the trigger and see what happens? Or would you just go back and say, you know what, it's a wasted season, let's call it a day? I just want to hear your thoughts.
Actually, hang on. Just hang on to the line. Why do you suggest it's a lost season? Like, are you, like, disinterested from the level of play? Like, I'm curious, like, what leads to that?
That's a fair, totally fair question. I feel like it's just there was expectations that we had, not going into last year except for the start, but because of how things were going last year and coming into this, we thought things were going to be much better, we're going to be more improved, make these changes to the play, but unfortunately the back end hasn't been that good. So it's kind of like the expectations that we had internally or the fans did haven't really been met. So that's why I would kind of say it's not the strongest season, or kind of a wasted season. And now you've got all these injuries, which are unfortunate, and you've got this additional drama that's going on as well as around the team. So it kind of seems like, yeah, you kind of become disinterested in some sort of way, but the expectations are not being met.
Yeah, fair enough there. Thanks for the phone call, Bikram, and good to have you back on the West Coast so you can watch the games on normal time more than being up till, what, midnight or well past midnight listening to the post-game show. But we appreciate it as always. I mean, I don't know if I buy the lost season stuff because so much can change.
We had this chat pregame as well. Yeah. I was curious his perspective.
Yeah, and I get, like, it hasn't been their year so far, but to me, until you're, like, out of the race, so to speak, I don't view it as a lost season. Now, do I think they should be spending assets like last year for a rental? No, like, I don't think you can justify making a Lindholm-type trade again this year for a rental. Like, I don't think you should go after that. Now, a lot can happen between now and the deadline, but I don't like that idea. But I don't think you should just forget about making improvements or making trades or moves because you're waiting to the offseason. What if something comes along around the deadline? And the goal should be to make your team better. And if you have a chance to make your team better this year and beyond this season, I don't think you should wait until the offseason to do that. Because if they would have waited, so to speak, they never would have made the Hronek trade, right? And I know people have mixed opinions on Hronek, but, like, he's a good player for this team, and they missed having him on the blue line. And had they just waited, maybe they don't find a player like him, you know? So it's one of those things where I think you take the opportunities when they come, and until you're out of it, I don't think you should view this as a lost season. Getting into the playoffs, making the playoffs, getting these guys more run in the postseason matters. Even if you don't win the cup this year, like, build towards the future, like, build towards winning a round. Maybe try to get a second round in and see if you guys can find ways to elevate your game. Can Pettersson take a step in the playoffs? Can we see him get to another level? Quinn Hughes has been tremendous, right? We agree, though, in the postseason, Quinn did not have the same impact. Can he find a way to have a bigger impact in the postseason? Because that's going to bode well for this team down the road. And I'm not saying, you know, just make the playoffs and be happy about it, but I don't view it as being a lost season. A lost season to me is if you're out of the playoff race and you're giving yourself no chance to make it, that to me is a lost season.
the flight doesn't go down when there's turbulence. You got to work your way through the turbulence. You have to develop the strength to endure through this and just buy yourself time. And that's why tonight, like, just getting the 2 points, buys yourself some time, gives your chance of guys to get healthy and come back a little bit better. Like, I get it. It has been a lot this season. Joshua, Demko, Pettersson, Miller, Hughes, Besser, Hronek, right? Like, we're talking about eight guys here that have all missed time and important guys for you as well. Like, that's the thing. Continue to compete, man. Like, going to the playoffs is awesome. And if this team can get at full strength, you're going to want to rather be in the playoffs. I just don't understand lost season talk 37 games in.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, right? Like, I do understand the overall point of, if this is not your year, don't do something reckless. Don't chase a outcome this year that's not realistic. But like, I understand
you're still
that.
60 days away from having that conversation. 100%. That's the thing.
No, I know. We had
do not get dispirited.
No, we had people
push through it.
Yeah, we had it was a Sean who texted in before the show and he was saying similar things. Like, I thought the season was over after the last game. We should just move on. It's like, man, we got 46 games to go. You're in the playoff mix. Like, and I think part of the reason
you can't ask the players to battle more if you're not willing to battle for it. Come on.
Well, I think honestly, like I said, this is the first year in a long time where people don't know what this Canucks team truly is, right? Because, you know, forever it was the rebuild under the Benning years, and they were out of the playoff mix pretty much early on, so you knew they weren't going to be a playoff team. And then the bubble year, they had a great start, right? They make the postseason, mm-hmm. You know, the pandemic happened, but they had a great start. You weren't really worried about them missing the playoffs towards the end when some injuries happened, but then, again, the pandemic hit. And then after that, it was failure after failure. The North Division, complete disaster. The second year back, disaster start to the season. Then following year, another disaster start to the season, right? They're out of the playoffs 10, 15 games into the campaign. And by the time they made some run out of it, it was something out of it. It was, okay, interesting, but nobody really thought they would make the playoffs or be a real playoff team. So you knew right away whether this team was going to be bad or good. Last year, you knew right away, hey, they're good. 10, 20 games in, they're competing. This year, we don't know what they are. And I think that unknown makes it a little bit harder to digest. And I think people don't like uncertainty. And I'm getting so many texts, and you get it too, and messages where people like tell us, what is this team? I need to know, like, should I believe in this team or not? And it's because they don't know what to make of it. And I don't mean to cop out, but it's like, we don't have all the information, to be honest. Like, yes, they haven't been convincing to be a contender, but they haven't been healthy enough and have enough guys going at the same time for us to know what the ceiling truly is. We've seen some peaks of good performances, but they haven't stretched it together. Can they start putting those things together consistently? Well, if they get Pettersson back healthy, Hughes back healthy, you go on this Eastern road trip, you start stringing together some games, maybe you feel a bit better about it. But you have enough time to let that happen. Like, I wouldn't have the same opinion if the Canucks were sitting here with 32 points in 36 games, right? If they were 4 points under 500 right now, or 32 points in 37 games, I'd be like, man, you got to win five in a row just to get to 500. And to me, it's like, do that first, then we'll have a conversation.
But
you're not even...
Those were the type of conversations we were having when Boudreaux took over.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, if they win six in a row, they're back to a spot. Real conversations that we had. And they kind of did it, and they got within 5 points, but it was that scenario. You're sitting at 7 points above the line right now.
They would have to lose seven in a row to get to 500.
Correct.
Right? And I'm not saying it's a great place to be, but you're right in the thick of it. And you're on pace for mid-90 points. You could easily push that pace up with a few wins in a row too. So I just think it's way too early to, you know, put a fork into this season. What else are you seeing on the text inbox?
650. Tony, I think that was a well-deserved win. There were some crazy moments, but I thought Canucks overall did enough to deserve. One concern is with Demko. Yes, he's a fantastic goalie. At the same token, I think the Canucks were smart. If the Canucks were smart, they'd start doing contract talks with Lankinen, so they're not in the same position come this summer or September. Brett from Lethbridge, I liked Hoglander's game tonight. Bottom six was huge tonight. Not sure on Miller's shifts getting cut short and not starting with him in OT with Besser. It's not a good look for Tockett. Not sure if making a point on a couple of penalties is worth losing out on the points. That is Brett in Lethbridge texting in.
Yeah, a lot of reaction, a lot of takes on how this game unfolded. And we'll break the goals down a bit more on the other side and go a bit more in depth on everything that we saw. But as far as like some of these standout performances, I think Garland tonight, we talked about him briefly, mm-hmm. but I did not like the last game against Calgary. I didn't like his performance overall. We know that goal Kadri scored, he wasn't great on the back check. I thought tonight, yeah, we'll get to that first goal. Didn't love the play he made. But after that, I thought he was probably the Canucks' most dangerous skater tonight, like individually creating scoring chances. There was that one shift in the second where the Canucks had the like 3 minutes of pressure in the in the zone. I think he created three chances himself. So I thought Garland was really a standout performer tonight for the Canucks.
Yeah, and you know, as the team grew into the game, as we talked about in that first goal, like does he give the puck away a bit too cheaply in that moment? But as far as the team improving, Connor Garland was the, I would say, the number one catalyst of improving through that period, but also into the second period, and he gets his goal on a nice play.
Yeah, and I think if Garland can drive play that way and continue doing that on his own line, this is where if Pettersson can come back and get going, JT can go with his line, that line can get going too, and we know what Teddy Bluger is doing, no matter who he's playing with, it seems like. And tonight, I thought that line, again, like you talk about creating, you talk about being in the thick of things, that line certainly did again tonight too.
Man, whatever Teddy Bluger does, man, it just seems to work. And unlucky, he doesn't get that opportunity in overtime as well. DeBrusk makes a nice play to get around Grubauer. I thought he maybe could have shot, nevertheless, puts a pass right into the crease. Unlucky for it to go off Burakovsky's skate. And I don't even think Bluger got a shot attempt. We had a couple of people texting him, how does Bluger not score? I think it goes off Burakovsky's skate, and he's able to skate away with it behind the net.
And what about Oliver Bjorkstrand tonight for the Seattle Kraken? He had like three clear scoring chances on Demko, and then he gets a couple of terrific ones on Lankinen too. And I thought when he got the shootout chance, I was like, he's probably going to score this one. Like, this will be the one he finally scores. And he like trips over too, and Lankinen makes a save. Like, he was probably the one guy you're like, dude.
There's three like grade A's just for Bjorkstrand today.
Yeah.
And yeah, against both goalies. But they all bested him. I'm just curious if he goes back to the same move every time. Like, well, I tried this against Thatcher. I'll try this against Kevin. He wasn't paying attention earlier, but does not come off for Oliver Bjorkstrand. He breakaways, two-on-ones. It was all over the place.
Yeah. Renfrew Marco on the text inbox says, what about Dak, baby? What a monster on the ice. This was probably the most physically engaged we've seen, I wouldn't say all season, because he's had a couple of games here and
there. Well, the first couple of games, you could see like the adrenaline was going, and he threw a lot of hits early. The minute-to-minute consistency hasn't really been there necessarily for Dakota Joshua, but that back and forth with Montour throughout the course of the game, like it drew the attention, right? And that's something you want to see.
And we talked about it quite a bit after the game last time around. He was out, late in the game and ends up getting victimized on the goal against. And it's like
he was out again late in this one as well.
He was out, but hey, the coach trusts him. And tonight, I thought that trust was not misplaced. And good to see Dakota Joshua have a bit of energy and fight and fire. Him and Montour got into it, and he was willing to throw his body around, made a couple of good plays, and hopefully we're seeing him regain his game and his form. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of your thoughts on that side. If you want to call in, you can do so as well, 604-280-0650. We have other post-game comments from Canucks players. We'll break down the goals and a lot more on the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and postgame on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
DeBrusk battling for it with Bjorkstrand down low. Oliver Bjorkstrand gets it free across to the right circle for Montour, and another great save by Lankinen. This time off the blocker to keep it a 2-1 game. Montour, high slot, 12 minute left circle. Bjorkstrand is robbed by Lankinen. A great right pad save. And Kevin Lankinen isn't cold. He's red hot. It's still 2-1 Canucks, thanks to the performance from the 29-year-old Finn.
Kevin Lankinen stands tall in relief of Thatcher Demko, who left the game with back spasms, did not return, but the Canucks pick up a shootout win, 4-3 over the Kraken. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards as well coming up in a little bit, potentially. We'll see if Ian McIntyre is going to join us. It might be a dicey here for IMAC tonight because
he's kind of like Guillaume Brisebois. He's a game time decision.
Yeah, so it may not work out to have IMAC on here in the final segment, but we'll see what happens over this next little bit. Now, before we get to some more reaction, let's break down the goals that we saw here tonight. And like I said, I thought Garland had a really strong game, and it's not like this goal was his fault. It was a bad goal to give up by Thatcher Demko, but something that the team has talked about is when you're coming out of your own zone, don't just throw the puck into space and let the other team get in and come back in. Like, either get the puck deep or make a play and keep the flow through the neutral zone. And that's what I didn't love, because Garland has the puck along the wall, and you can see JT skating through the neutral zone just inside a little bit from Garland. Could have tried to chip it over to him or at least bank it off the boards. Just slides it down the ice, and all that does is invite pressure going back the other way for Seattle.
Yeah, and then it's just, look, there's really not much to it, right? It's an easy entry with some speed because Stevenson goes around a stationary Garland who's just, he basically tees up a neutral zone regroup. And then he does,
and he's caught flat-footed, yeah. Right? So it's like, you're giving them speed and you're caught. So that creates the rush chance, right?
And so, Stevenson just skates past it, and it's just a shot from the wing, and it just tucks under the arm of Thatcher Demko. And, you know, we saw a bad one against Seattle on Saturday from Beniers, and this one was a tough one as well. But then, hey, he was up to the task shortly thereafter because he had to make some big saves prior to the Sasson goal.
Yeah, he did, man. And I thought Demko struggled with that one he should have had, but he made a number of big, big saves to keep the Canucks in that game or keep the score 1-0. He had the Bjorkstrand breakaway save, and maybe his most impressive one in the first was it on that chance from Schwartz in close. He robs him with his pad. Like, it's a really good save on Schwartz, who kind of got away from Pugh Suter kind of lost his man, and he pops in and makes a great gets a great chance, and Demko makes an outstanding save. The Canucks were able to tie things up, Max Sasson getting the goal. And Bick, a common refrain we hear is shoot the puck more. And sometimes, hey, your shot doesn't even have to get through. But if you throw shots on net, and the Canucks are amongst the lowest shot volume teams in the National Hockey League, where are they in the league?
We had a text asking us, where are they? They're third last in shot attempts and shots on goal.
Okay. But this time, it was a shot attempt, and the attempt ended up helping the Canucks out.
Yeah, Heinen wins the offensive zone draw and just goes D to D across, and Hoglander works from one side of the ice behind the net to the other side, and he takes Vince Dunn with him up the wall. And so Hoglander just turns and shoots with one D-man in front of the net, and Yanni Gord was kind of playing that rail spot and, you know, protecting the front of the net, but then he flashes out a bit higher, and the puck goes off his stick, bounces right to Danton Heinen, and Heinen's just trying to stop it, settle it off his skate, but it bounces perfectly back into the middle for Sasson, and Josh Mahura is the other D-man, and now he's caught between two guys, and it's just too slow to react, and there's Sasson to smack it in, and it's his second goal of the year.
Yeah, Sasson does a good job of getting to the net. He uses his speed, and he's played a gritty game for the most part, and good on him for getting his second goal. And, you know, people were asking, why are we saying Sasson? And that's Sasson again. Apparently,
it's been a dramatic week.
Very dramatic. But first, it was kind of mentioned that, hey, Sasson is how it's properly said. But I think what got lost was that's how it's properly said, but we don't want you guys to say it.
It's been requested for it to go back to Sasson. So that's where we're at now.
So we're back at Sasson. Yeah. So good on Sasson. Made it 1-1 for the Canucks. And after that, Bick, the Canucks kept things rolling, and they were able to take the lead. And it was Connor Garland making it 2-1. And this all starts with a nice defensive play from Derek Forbort.
Yeah, and, you know, you watch this play, and because it starts with actually a 2-on-1, and Garland gets a kind of an awkward shot off that he doesn't get cleanly, but it kickstarts a chance for the Kraken to come out, and Schwartz is coming with speed, and he kind of does a shoulder check to see who's supporting with him, and in that time through the neutral zone, Forbort almost checks his speed and allows Schwartz to come into him, and then just pokes it away as Schwartz gets his eyes back on Forbort, and in that moment, there's the loose puck, PDG picks it up, and I don't know if he saw Forbort. You pointed out, it's like, hey, Forbert's pointing at Garland, and there's a wide open open pass there.
Or, hey, maybe he heard him.
Yeah,
at the very
whatever
least.
It is, there's some communication there, and PDG turns and hits a pass to Garland, who you know was quick to get up ice in this spot because there was a big ocean of space there. And then just a slick play here by Connor Garland, faking backhand, forcing Grubauer hard to his right and coming back to the forehand and just tucks it in.
Yeah, nice move by Connor Garland. Gave the Canucks a 2-1 lead. And, you know, before we move on to the next goals, Derek Forbort, I thought he had mostly good moments, a couple tough ones with the puck, but him and Vinny Desharnais tonight were the Canucks' best defensemen by the analytics, so to speak, right?
Ooh.
So 70% of the shots were being controlled by the Canucks 5-on-5 when Forbort was on the ice, and nearly 70% of the shots were being controlled when Desharnais was on the ice. They were both on the ice for one goal for, one against, but as far as scoring chances, significantly more for than against. I mean, they were steady tonight for the most part. Both those players and Forbort made a great play there, and there's a reason why Desharnais played in overtime, because overall, he had a solid game tonight.
He was another one that, to me, epitomized like a tough first period, but yeah, grew throughout the game, right? He has a big block with about 3 minutes to go in regulation prior to the Vince Dunn goal. But there were just moments in the first period like, oh, man, it's going to be that type of game. But obviously this one, with the assist on the goal here, or the play on the goal is a big one too. Actually, he did get an assist his third of the year. There you go.
Yeah, it's good from him. Him and Forbort both had a good night here tonight. The Canucks kept things going. Tyler Myers gave the Canucks the 3-1 lead, and you know, a big shot from him, a nice shot, but it's a nice feed from JT Miller going low to high to pick out Tyler Myers.
Yeah, and it was pointed on the broadcast too. He doesn't get a point on it, but Brock Besser, the work he does on this, because he's protecting the puck. I believe it was Adam Larson. Yeah, it was Adam Larson harassing him, and then the work he does also draws Yanni Gord to him as well. So he's taken on two really good players here in Larson and Gord, and then he just slides it back down. Or he slides it inside to Jake DeBrusk, and I like that DeBrusk just makes a quick decision here. He was kind of in a spot that he could turn and shoot, but he's also just looking at JT, and just a quick decision to JT. He flips it over to Myers, who's creeping down, and gets a shot just inside the right circle, and far post, beating the blocker of Grubauer.
Yeah, it's a really nice shot from Tyler Myers. Makes it 3-1, and that's when things started turning later on in the third period. And we talked about JT Miller's up-and-down game. He was actually named the first star in Seattle tonight because he got the game-winning goal. He had the assist as well on the third goal that Myers got on the night here. But he takes a bad penalty 200 feet away from his own end, and it is on Chandler Stephens. And he gets away with the hook initially, and it's not getting away with it like it's a clean, because it's mostly stick on stick. But he persists, gets a stick on it again, and he gets Stephenson clearly in the hands. It's just not a wise penalty to take. The Canucks end up on the PK, and that is where Seattle is able to get the 3-2 goal, and it came in the dying seconds of the penalty as well.
Yeah, I felt like a couple of odd moments here, too, from Pew Suter. Because there's a loose puck going to the right of the goalie against the far wall. And if you freeze it in a moment, the two closest players to it are Pew Suter and Noah Juulsen. So you think, oh, that's an easy win. And Suter stops skating, even though he looks closer to it. And he then stops skating and then tries to hold up Kaapo Kakko.
Yeah.
But he misses Kakko, and the angle Kakko gets to go around him gives him an advantage to close on Noah Juulsen as well. Again, it looks like Juulsen's the further guy from the puck. And so, you know, Kakko's efforts there prevent Juulsen from getting the puck out. And then eventually Suter also blocks a point shot, and he goes down, and he's just unable to get back into the play quick enough. And it forces Juulsen kind of up, and from that diamond formation, it kind of forces him high. And they just work it low, and suddenly you see this puck as it goes low to Shane Wright. He's got a guy on the back post that Soucy's guarding, but Soucy can't get to the bumper. He doesn't want to go to Shane Wright. He's kind of stuck in a one-on-three situation, but it gets to Beniers. Bluger's a little slow to rotate back into the bumper, and Beniers goes upstairs to make it 3-2.
Yeah, and you're right about that blocked shot by Suter, because if he's if he's not as hobbled, does he get back?
He's probably able just to in a better situation, right?
And maybe he can
slow down that whole that whole process.
Or maybe gets a stick on Beniers, yeah. Right? But not to blame him, but just, you know, you block a shot and obviously you're...
Or at least he keeps Juulsen down low, right? And Juulsen can prevent that pass from Shane Wright.
Yeah, and I mean, same thing for... Because Soucy kind of gets caught in no man's land, and he's thinking, what do I take away? The backdoor play or I take Beniers? And he takes away the backdoor play.
He's playing rock, paper, scissors in that moment,
exactly.
Right? He's just trying to guess right.
Yeah, 100%. And I get taking away the backdoor, because that's a tap-in play, whereas at least the head-on shot, it's a shot face-on, give your goalie a chance. If it's backdoor, you don't have a chance. Nonetheless, it goes in 3-2. Canucks get victimized for JT Miller's poor penalty in the offensive zone. And then in the dying minute, in the final minute, the Canucks are undermanned because the Seattle Kraken pulled the goalie, of course. And we talk about screens sometimes from the Canucks' own defenders getting in the way of their goaltender, and this kind of happens perfectly. Like, if you're trying to flash screen the goaltender, it's a perfect flash screen coming across where a number of Canuck forwards and defensemen, I don't know if I blame him on it, because one of those, like, you're defending, Vince Dunn does a good job of stopping the puck and getting the shot through. Like, we're talking about a high-end, good offensive defenseman who's very good at getting his shot through, and Vince Dunn, so give him some credit too, but it's something that Quinn Hughes has done a good job of, is waiting for that exact time as players cross the face of the goalie to get a shot off, and this one found a way to beat Kevin Lankinen.
Yeah, just a D-to-D in the offensive zone just shortly after an entry, and Dunn just aims it for the far post with bodies in the way. And, you know, I totally understand trying to get out of the eye line of a goalie, right? But I think you should be doing that on the short side, not coming across the face of the goalie in that scenario. And Garland and Myers both do it. And if you're going to do that, for me, it's get in the way of the shot, right? Block that one. Puck finds its way through and creeps into the back post. And it's reliving like Saturday, except it's a two-goal lead in this spot.
Yeah. And the game goes to overtime. A few chances both ways, mostly for Seattle, who kind of dominated the puck in overtime. Nothing came of it. Lankinen made a good save on Bjorkstrand yet again in overtime. I wasn't able to beat him. But they get to a shootout, and JT Miller scores a lone goal, and the Canucks take the 4-3 victory over the Seattle Kraken. And I know that in a game like this, when you lose the lead, it leaves a sour taste. And the coach also mentioned there are things you can clean up, mm-hmm. and you can do a lot better of. But it was a bit different than how they lost the 3 goals against Seattle last time around. I mean, that's 3 goals in under 5 minutes. This is not acceptable. Again, you have to do a better job of not losing the lead. But it wasn't the same way that it happened at home ice last week.
No, completely different environment, right? It's power play and 6-on-5. And even the 6-on-5 was just a shot from distance here. I'll try to bring this up here, but I don't feel like there was a lot of shots on goal from Seattle in the, you know, final stretch there, because...
So you mean in overtime?
No, just before the Dunn goal.
So yeah, in the third period, Seattle had 7 shots on goal total in the third. Now, they had 19 attempts in all situations, but only 7 of them made it on goal.
There you go. I'll bring it up, how like the distance between shots between the Dunn one and the last one.
Right. Yeah, you can look that up.
I think it was, so the last shot on goal that they have registered is Shane Wright at the 11-minute mark. And then they scored with,
in
the final minute.
If JT doesn't take that penalty,
yeah,
you're probably salt this game away a lot easier. You don't get to overtime, most likely, right? I mean, who knows what happens in the game, but they were far better control in
this game. The Beniers goal was the last shot that they had.
Until
the Vince Dunn goal.
Yeah, so even after that, like, you pulled the goalie at 6-5, right? You want to see them be able to close it out, but again, a bit different than how it happened last time around.
That was it. There was a Tolvanen missed shot, a Larson missed shot. They did pretty good there defensively.
Yeah, 100%. Let's get to some more reaction on the text inbox, 650-650. This one here says, trade for Byram. That would be great. And we know the Canucks are still looking to improve the blue line, and we'll see if anything comes of that over the next little while. This one here says, I always felt that Christian Willanen was a pretty good puck mover. Should the Canucks be giving him a chance? Now, I thought Guillaume Brisebois tonight was fine. He actually made a great defensive play on a 2-on-1
in the
first, broke up a 2-on-1 in the first period. Pretty nondescript overall, but I thought defensively he was solid. I thought he did his job for the most part tonight.
When was his last game?
We're talking about two years ago, right? Yeah.
It's been a minute here for Guillaume Brisebois. So for him, with that level of rust since his His last game was March 31st of 2023. And for him to step back into this, have a nondescript game, like that's perfect. Well done in that spot. But as far as diversity of player styles and all that, yeah, we talked about that in the pregame show. If things trended in a certain way, is that an option for the Canucks? Certainly something to look at if the plan doesn't keep working here. This one, Roman and Abbotsford. Canucks are on pace for their second-best season in 11 years, and people are calling it a lost season. Sure, it's not an all-in year with the wishy-washy play, but there's so much parity in this league. Anyone who gets in can win it all. Panthers 2 years ago barely made it in, and they went to a cup final. Obviously, look where the Panthers are now. That one's from Roman in Abbotsford.
Yeah, Jay from Surrey says if the Oilers threw in the towel after 37 games last season, they would have not gone as far as they did last season. Another good point, right? Like, and this one says, despite all the adversity, the Canucks are 3 points back of Edmonton. Look like the Canucks have been against it and somehow are right in the mix. If they can catch fire in the second half, this could be a truly interesting season. Ride it out is what this text message says as well. And you know, whatever is in store for us in the second half of the year, we'll find out. We had a text from Irfan in Maple Ridge, and he's like, why don't they just, if they're not going to win the cup this season, why not miss the playoffs and get the first overall pick? The goal should be to win a cup, not to just to make the playoffs and lose in the first round. First of all, like the first overall pick, you have to be really bad to get the first overall pick. The Canucks currently have, 44 points on the campaign, 44 points in 37 games. For them to have a realistic chance of the first overall pick, they would have to literally tank. Right? Like
Columbus currently is the last team with the chance. So how many points Columbus has? 38 and 39?
So they have 38. So you're 6 points up on Columbus. And Columbus, how much is their chance of winning the first overall pick?
I think 11th spot is 3%.
3%?
Yeah.
Okay. 3%.
And you need them to close the gap of three games on you.
Yeah. So 3%.
Yeah.
And that's...
I like the moments when Stat gets astounded and turns to me. And I was like, I don't know what you want me to say, man. It's 3%.
I just don't get it. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like the whole first overall pick thing. You only have a chance at the first overall pick, like a legitimate chance, if you're like one of the bottom five teams. Sure, sometimes a team wins the lottery and gets lucky, whatever. But if you're sitting here and pinning your hopes to 3%, like, come on. Like, we have better things to do than that. And
Being the last seed in the playoffs, like, say you're like the worst team in, do you have better than 3% odds
to win the cup?
Implied odds
to win the cup?
Yeah,
I don't, depends on the team, right? Like, depends on the team. Like this Canucks team, again, like, I'm not sure what they're going to do, but if they face, say, Winnipeg in the first round, I don't think they're cooked.
No, again, right? The only teams I'm like, we kind of did a tiering in the pregame show.
In the Western Conference, there's like one team you're really scared of, that's Vegas.
Yeah,
but even Vegas, like, they have some holes, too. Their defense is great. Their forwards have been scoring, but they don't have a ton. Like, they have depth, but the high end outside of Eichel and Stone has been a little bit, you know, somewhat questionable. But they're a really good hockey team, right? And again, I don't know what the Canucks truly are at their peak, but I don't believe in this notion of missing the playoffs and get a better draft pick. Like, I'm for the draft picks during rebuilds, but you're not in a rebuild phase. Missing the playoffs is not a good thing.
I do wonder if a lot of Canucks fans have grown up in rebuild logic, which, like, hey, from 2014 onwards, many people were screaming rebuild and had to, like, they wanted to see a rebuild and it was the right thing to do. But you go through 9 years of, like, rebuild, 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 and they never really do it, and they kind of fall backwards into some of these assets like Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. But I think there's this just, like, we didn't see it then, so you have to do it to get to this spot. It just still feels like existing in, like, rebuild logic.
Yeah, Bo from Burnaby says, rebuild is our safe space.
Yeah, yeah, again, you know, it's the blankie that gives you comfort. It's like, well, at some point, you got to grow up and take that off.
Well, and also, you know what it is? It's like the hope, right? Because it's like, well, this player, we don't know what it could be. It could
tomorrow
end up
is
being,
always better.
Right, yeah, the magic beans. Well, what if they hit? You can project in your mind in a few years, it can look like this, right? And I just don't think the Canucks are in a position where missing the playoffs right now is a good thing. It just isn't. And I don't think the Canucks are anywhere near bad enough to have a catastrophic season where they have a realistic chance of having a high draft pick. So if they miss the playoffs, you're still picking like 14th, 15th, 16th. And I'm like, if that's what you're picking, like, honestly, I'd rather see you make the playoffs. I honestly rather would see you make the playoffs than doing that. This one here from Dale in Maple Ridge. You didn't answer the question on Willanen. I like Willanen. I have. Do I think he has a chance? Yes, I do. Quinn Hughes coming back, though, does close that door a bit quickly, because when he comes back, you have Soucy and you have Forbert, and those guys are going to play ahead of Willannon. I like Willannon, and I was not surprised he didn't get a chance already, but that tells you where they think his game's at. He's been injured too at parts of the season. But the fact that he chose Brisebois, I think, tells you where he's at. And even if they called them up, I don't think he's viewed as a solution, really. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if the Canucks struggles continue and they have guys missing on the back end, I like Willannon and would like to see him get a look again. But I don't think that's in the cards.
If the puck-moving struggles had really continued and, like, the defense really had a bad night tonight, it would intensify that. But it just feels like there's so many bodies here. Like, I'd probably rather just see Branstrom again in that scenario.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, no IMAC tonight, and we're just up against it. We have a few more minutes left, but let's get the thoughts of the Canucks netminder tonight, who stepped in and had a great game for the Canucks to get the victory after Thatcher Demko went down. It is Kevin Lankinen, and here he is talking about stepping up in Demko's absence.
Obviously an unfortunate circumstance with Demko heading down the tunnel tonight, but how'd you feel just stepping in, obviously making some incredible saves in the evening?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it was really unfortunate. I don't know what happened there. I haven't talked to him after the game, but hopefully it's nothing serious. I think he's done a tremendous job pushing himself to come back after a long break. So I hope him all the best. Gotta wish that it's nothing bad. But yeah, at the same time, it's a good challenge, you know. That's why you prepare all day. You prepare all year, all summer, because you never know what's going to happen, right? So yeah, I'm happy the guys helped me out a little bit too as well, and it's a huge win for the guys.
Coming off that loss just a couple days ago against Seattle, what does this win mean to you guys to be able to grab this one tonight?
Yeah, it's big. I don't know if anybody was thinking about Saturday anymore. Kind of forgot that one pretty quickly. So just the way we dug in, hang in there, find a way to win, I think that's huge.
From what you saw from the guys in front of you tonight, I mean, nine different guys grabbing points across the board. What do you want to see carry over into tomorrow's game?
Same thing. I think guys are doing a tremendous job stepping in roles that they maybe haven't played before. We got new faces, and I think everybody's buying in, doing their best. So it's fun to watch, and a good stepping stone to move forward.
How hard is it to come into a game cold like that, like you did, and you faced some really tough chances there right in the very first couple minutes that you were in the game?
Yeah, it's a challenge, obviously. But as a goalie, it's not the first time in my career I'm in that situation, so I think experience obviously helps. But at the same time, you know, you just got to be always ready, because you never know what's going to happen. Even if you're not starting, you got to do your thing, prepare, and be engaged, because the team might need you. And yeah, like I said, thankfully we scored a couple goals and guys played well in front of me as well.
And what kind of goes through your mind there when they do come back and tie it up and really intense overtime period? I mean, what's going through your mind in the end of that game?
Don't think. Nothing's really going through my mind. That's the ultimate goal, being in the zone. Nothing really bugs you. Nothing really bothers you. You're just focused in the present moment. So whatever happens, just happens, and you keep moving forward. So I think that's my mindset.
That is Kevin Lankinen on his mindset and stepping in. Doesn't know why Demko, but we know that, you know, obviously back spasms, as told to the media after the game by the Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. But, you know, he's been absolutely outstanding for the Canucks. And this was a game where it could have gone sideways coming in cold. And I would imagine we see him start again tomorrow against the Preds. Like, I'm not going to Tolopilo.
It was part-time duty today for Kevin Lankinen, so tomorrow he gets the full-time.
Yeah, no, bang on. He played half the game tonight, a little bit more than half, right? So it's not your traditional back-to-back. He was set to play tomorrow, and I'm not starting Shelovs or Tolopilo when they fly in, most likely. Unless they somehow caught the red eye tonight, which I think is unlikely, one of the goalies. The earliest one of these guys is going to get in tomorrow is going to be like noon or 1 o'clock, like flying cross country. Like, I'm not starting one of those guys over Lankinen tomorrow.
It's Kevin Lankinen's net. Plus, against his old team.
The Preds.
Come on.
No, he's playing. And I think you feel like the Canucks are in pretty safe hands if he's between the pipes. We'll end it on a couple of text messages. Kyle from Pender says, I had to get off the couch and lay down on the cold floor when Myers was out in overtime. So needed to the stress relief, bring the pressure down when that all happened. All right. You know what, we'll leave it at that. Lotso texted into, was that possibly Sasson's best game this season? Maybe PDG too. And a lot of good man-on-man, five-on-five coverage, and says, love the show, enjoy it more on a winning night. It's always more fun when the Canucks win. Appreciate the thoughts, and appreciate everybody texting in, calling in, being part of it, or just listening. Always a lot of fun. It's good to see the Canucks win tonight, 4-3 in a shootout. We'll see if they can keep it going tomorrow against the Nashville Predators. Puck drop just after 7 from Rogers Arena. He's Bick Nizar. I'm Satyar Shah. We're both back at it again tomorrow on Canuck Central. Yannick Hansen's going to join us. We're going to chat with Luke Shen, plus Mailbag Friday, and special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.